you don't have to erase, deconstruct anything in a robotic and cold way and find nothingness, emptiness, the void, the screen, blankness, and somehow only that is truth, only that is reality. You don't have to destroy separation, duality. Actually, love welcomes the display of relationship. Love is that total unconditional embrace and allowance and creation of duality. And of course, this makes no sense. There's no logic in this. Why would life create something seemingly separate from life? Why would it create duality? Well, why questions aren't very helpful, because they just arrive at various contrasting answers based on different approaches. So what is the nature of this relationship you and I have? What is anything? Well, it's life, and that seamless oneness can appear as multiplicity. It can appear as separateness. And there's no need to do away with anything in order to recognize truth, because all you're ever experiencing is truth. You don't need to kind of knit everything together and then you've got this oneness, melting down gold jewelry into its essence, and then you've got this just one block of gold. It's not really like that. It's like that gold, that essence, it seems to delight in variety because it never departs from itself, never really leaves itself. It only ever sees itself because it's only gold. It's only gold, the primacy of reality.
Yeah, it looks sometimes like we don't recognize ourselves. That could be said to be the only seeming problem, is that we don't recognize ourselves. You can chop gold up into as many different ornaments and things and whatever it is you want. You can keep chopping. It never stops being gold. And that's what this is about, really, is finding out what was always the case. What was always the case, regardless. We never truly lose ourselves. We never actually become anything else. One piece of gold looks at another piece of gold. You could say that's manifestation. It looks at around the world at all these infinite pieces of gold that are around it. And the gold reflects back, and it doesn't recognize its own gold essence in what's reflected back. It's like misinterpreted the reflection of itself. Another way of looking at it saying is, you know, God is constantly looking in the mirror, and the mirrors are kind of like, they're kind of funhouse mirrors. They're very different shapes and sizes. God isn't recognizing itself because it feels like it looks different from itself. But find out what was always the case, what actually was always the case, what actually never changed. The separation never was a reality. It's actually an impossibility. Like true separation, it's an impossibility. If it was true, you'd have to give that separate thing its own reality. Everything would have its own reality, and there's no way if that could possibly be the case. You know, everything would have to be somehow outside of reality into a different reality. Like you're saying, you feel like you've got to homogenize it, bring it back together. Like somehow I've got to collect these parts and pull them back together, back into the, I've got to melt the gold down back into its liquid gold, you know, because that's the true state, apparently. It's not, it never was anything else.
You're listening to the Non-Duality Podcast. This is Nick Higham from thewholenessofexperience.com, and here with me is Paul Dobson. It's like what's said in Vedantic philosophy. To know that a pot is not real and only clay alone is real, we don't need to destroy the pot appearance. We only need to know clearly that the pot is just a name, just a form, and clay is the ultimate reality. It's only about recognizing the nature of clay. It's only about recognizing the nature. And then it's like everything is permitted to be exactly how it is. The clay can take on that appearance. It doesn't need to be destroyed. It doesn't need to be dismantled. and then there's only clay because we've eradicated duality. Like our friend Peter Brown said, to recognise the nature of one thing is to recognise the nature of all things. So it's only about seeing clearly that we add names and form to clay, and those names and that imagined form doesn't actually change the nature of the clay. Clay, gold, life, reality, God, self, delights in experiencing itself and exploring itself and interacting with itself and getting lost in itself and forgetting itself and coming back to itself. That's the game. That's the dream. That's what's going on. That's the challenge. That's the opportunity. Would you just want to delve into pure clay and lose your apparent individuality? Just become pure gold, just be melted down into seamless, pure gold. Would you really want that? Now, here's the thing. We do. But would there be any possibility of self-knowledge, of self-awareness in that state? This is what we have. We have this world of duality. And this is just one way, most likely of infinite ways, of exploring yourself. And some of that exploration looks like getting lost and forgetting clay and fixating on names and forms and believing that the names and the forms are absolute when that's never true. The only absolute is the primacy of reality. You can't not be it. You're always it, no matter what. You never leave yourself. You never become anything else. But you have full self-permission and self-love to become anything, to reimagine yourself endlessly for no reason other than love, other than the absolute delight in being, in existing. I am. You are. I don't know what I am, but I know that I am. That knowledge, that jhana is inherent, is so accessible. I know that I am. I know that I exist. I don't know how, why, or what it is that existence is, but I am that and I know that. Of course, the mind will say, well, you know, of course, I mean, your consciousness is a product of the body. And it always goes back to that identification with this finite form. And you know that you are. You know that you exist, and that existence is primary. It's the natural state, the natural condition that you are. And it's a shapeshifter. it can change forms. It can appear as a finite body with a lifetime, a lifespan that grows, that decays, you know, disintegrates. But you are. Can you quantify that existence that you are? Can you put an age on it? Can you find a limit to it? Where does the existence that you are start and end? Does it have limits? Does it have a gender? Does it have a shape? Does it have an inherent condition or characteristic or quality or personality trait? No. But it includes every characterization, every form, every shape.
Yeah. I remember in a film called Waking Life, there's a quote which I like. Every single passing second, God is phoning us. And we're just constantly ignoring his calls, saying, not now, not now. Not now. I'm not available. You know, I'm not available for your call, God. You know, that's basically what we're doing. It's like, bring, bring. No, I'd rather think about the past, you know, like rather than be here with as being God here. That's all we're doing. It's just like the second, you know, we start thinking about the past or the future or thinking, interpreting what's here in some way, it's kind of like the illusion of separation, the parts that were never separate seem to be reified. It's like it just becomes like solidified almost. And you're like, oh no, that's definitely the way things are. But if you're absolutely directly with what's here right now on the absolute cutting edge of your direct experience, it's not like that at all. And that is, it's trippy as hell. Like, because it really, what seemed like a millisecond ago, or just a few seconds ago, it really seemed like there were separate things. Like there's a laptop here, and there's Nick over there on the screen, and there's a microphone here, and they're all separate things. And here's Paul, here's myself, and I know where I am in time and space. And but if I stay really, really like exactly right, like on the cutting edge of my direct experience, not in a thinky way, just like there, just there, not allowing interpretations to tell me what's happening here, it's not like that at all. If you can really stay there, it just gets less and less like that, and it becomes almost like liquid, like it becomes like everything's flowing into itself, you know, it's just water flowing into itself, just like it's very nothing solid, it's just the risings of different qualities of experience flowing into itself, as opposed to, oh, that's that solid thing over there. Here, I can grab it. There we go. That's definitely solid. That's real. I'm over here. This microphone's here. That table's there. It becomes like flowings of quality, flowings of sensation, flowings of color, just like all merging in and just flowing. Like when you're really with your direct experience. And this is not like, you know, these are words being attempted to be overlaid on top of what's happening. It's not like that. You have to kind of feel into it for yourself. As Peter Brown always said, used to say, be with your experience. And I've repeated this so many times, but it's worth repeating because it's such a good one. There's two good ones, actually. I've got be with your experience in the same way that you find out what water's like by putting your hand into it. Or what temperature the water is by putting your hand into it. You want to know what the bath temperature is? You put your hand into the water. No one needs a thermometer. You know immediately. You know, there's immediate feedback. You also know you know what water is by doing that as well. You're like, what's water? Oh, immediate feedback. And he said, the other thing he said was, be with your experience like a blind man reading Braille. It's a similar kind of thing. You just, the immediate feedback. It's not a, this is immediately known. This is immediately known already. It's not like, oh, I have to, let me think about this. Let me deconstruct this. Let me take this apart and see it in the correct way. It's like, no, you're already seeing it in the correct way. You already are. It's not like part of you already is. You are already seeing this absolutely as it is. What then happens is you then go into this kind of prismic mind of yours and then split it, shatter it apart into a thousand different pieces, and then believe that thing. You go then follow the you know, the perfect clear ray of light then goes through this prism of your mind, and a billion different colors come out, and you follow all the colors and go, I'm going that direction with this, I'm going the complex route, it must be solid things and different people and me and them. And it's, but actually, what really all that was really in that was just this one singular ray of light. You can look at it as a billion different colors, but that's not the truth of what it is. If you follow it back to its source, it's the ray of light. And that's what's here. And this is, you know, this is really when this is felt. It sounds kind of cold and like, oh, well, it's just my experience, you know. It's just my direct experience. That sounds kind of cold. It's just me. It's kind of lonely. Well, what if that happens to be love? Is that lonely? You know, what if when you really feel this, you spend some time here and see if that's cold and lonely, because it's not. If it feels cold and lonely, you're going into interpretations in your mind. When this is really felt, it feels like love. It feels like home. It feels, yeah, just, it feels just so sweet. like there's a sweetness to it, because how can you not love that which you are? Looking at yourself and you see, and but not just, you know that, oh, that's intellectually, you look at like a door, for example, and you go, you don't just think, oh, that's me, how interesting, it's all just me. You see it, and because it's, because you're seeing clearly, it's like you're seeing, this is a metaphorical way of putting it, but it's like you are, the feeling of it is you're seeing with your heart. It's like love is recognizing itself. And that feeling, that the love that was in relationship with other people, the people that your favorite people in the world, your favorite pet, everything, is in that feeling. Like you just sort of melt into that. If you're finding yourself in a cold, solipsistic place, you're actually in the mind, as I found out in a very harsh way during a mushroom trip. there's a kind of non-dual solipsism that you feel, it can feel like you're in, and you feel like you're in non-duality, but you're not. You're just kind of in your own intellectualized version of non-duality. But when this is truly felt, I mean, this is that all that is made of here is golden liquid love. Constantly just not recognizing itself every single moment, which is kind of funny.
Or you could say, you could say constantly recognizing itself in every moment, because there is only that, but just not consciously recognizing itself. And this is what spirituality boils down to, if you want to call it spirituality. And that is to know oneself consciously, to be knowingly who you are, what you are, to recognize the nature of this manifestation. So it's not quite true that you can overlook yourself, because there's only yourself. If, just to use the gold analogy, if there's only gold and gold wasn't formed into anything distinct, just pure gold, then there'd be no way to know anything. There'd be no way to know the nature of gold. And so gold manifests in different ways, in different forms. So it's like, I think we get into this idea that, as we've been saying, we need to somehow boil it all down, knit it all together into non-duality. Then that's real, then that's truth, and then I'll know myself. Because somehow all these forms and names and manifestations are distracting or cause ignorance. And in a way they do, because if I start to believe that I'm only this body, only this mind, only these thoughts, if I start to believe that I'm only this glass, then that's delusion, isn't it? If I'm limited, if I'm confined by that form that I'm taking, that's delusion. That's ignorance. I'm only this body. I'm only this glass, I'm only this watch, I'm only this phone. It's not true. It's true that you are the entirety of reality, the totality of reality. You're all of it. So you can't miss yourself in that sense. If you're all of it, you can't miss yourself. You can only miss yourself, ironically, if you're not appearing as anything. If it's just what you are in your essence, then is that a state of self-knowledge? Is that a state of self-awareness? It's a state of just pure being, maybe without even the need to know oneself. But it seems like gold is appearing in these forms, in these shapes. The ocean is appearing as different waveforms, waving at itself. The fire is flickering as different flames, but they're all seamlessly one with the whole. And it's not a mistake. It's not something to correct. It's not something to solve or perfect or transform. See it for what it is. That there's only gold, there's only water, there's only fire, there's only reality. Then there's an okayness that comes with however that shows up, however it presents itself to itself. There's a love for those different manifestations. And there's this capacity to be anything. There is a beautiful quote by Nisargadatta. He says, "I find that somehow by shifting the focus of attention I become the very thing I look at and experience the kind of consciousness it has. I become the inner witness of the thing. I call this capacity of entering other focal points of consciousness love. You may give it any name you like. So that's what reality is doing. It's kind of entering different focal points within itself, different focal points of consciousness. And that's love. That freedom of expression, freedom of exploration, that's love. You know, it's not a problem. I don't even see it as ignorance. The only ignorance is I'm only this focal point, the body. That's ignorance. But even that serves a function. Even that has been manifested for some unspeakable purpose. You know, nothing is out of place.
Yeah, it can't be made of anything else, can it? It's all exactly what it is. Yeah, if you find yourself in the midst of suffering, it feels like there's a hell of a problem there. Which, of course, is all made of this. But it's weird. It can't never be made of anything else. There's literally nothing else. Even the problems, even the misinterpretations, even the overlooking. But there's a fact that remains. When this doesn't recognize itself, suffering occurs. That's just something noticeable. And you don't want to suffer. It's just not enjoyable. That's a fact as well. I'm not going to sit there in suffering and go, well, it's just this. So there's something about suffering which is like a catalyst. It just goes, turn around. This is all me. This is all, we never changed, but you're misinterpreting what's happening here. Like, otherwise people would sit in suffering for an entire lifetime and never question it. They'll just, you know, or try and resist it in any way. They go, oh, this is fine. So it's those two things. It's like everything you're saying is true. And like if you listen to that from a philosophical or intellectual standpoint, you go, oh, this suffering, everyone going on in the world, don't worry about it. Like, don't do anything about it. Just sit there. Like, or, you know, it could be. And I think it's worth leaving in because it's true. But I'm also hearing it from like how it's heard by a lot of people who listen to non-dual stuff. And they go, oh, okay, it's nothing to do. Everything is already that. I'm just going to wait till I see it as it is. Okay, I'm waiting. You know, I'm like, I'm waiting now for the alarm bell to go off and I'm going to wake up. If you're suffering, as Nisargadatta said, suffering is a call to inquiry. It is always a call to inquiry because that's clear if you are suffering that you are misinterpreting what this is. Because if love is all that exists, if bliss, ecstasy, love is the fundamental ingredients in which this celebration cake is made, then if you're tasting dog shit in that cake, then there's something amiss. Like, something to inquire into, like, what's happening here? Is it actually dog shit, or am I just interpreting this sugary love, this bliss, as dog shit? And that can happen because we're infinite and we're creative and we give the power to it. Like, that is absolutely possible. We are literally infinite creativity and we manifest reality. We are God. So if we think the cake is made of dog shit, it will seem absolutely like it's made of dog shit. But you might at some point go, is it really? Let me just actually look at this for a second. And the second you do that, you're kind of already, your foot's already out the door. You're kind of half free. But you just go, okay, I'm just going to actually look at this. And that's, I guess, the part where it does seem like there is something, there's some action to take, or there's something to do, or there's some engagement to be had, or there's some misinterpretation to be looked at, or some belief to be looked at. Like, where you go, you know what, I'm really fed up of suffering. I'm really fed up. Like, is this actually what this is? Is this just made of suffering? And then, like, for non-dualists, that goes along with, but it's all that. With a capital T, it's all that is, and so this suffering is that too. And That's absolutely true, but if it's taken intellectually, it's just, that's just like not in any way helpful. So life, it's, you know, it's two things coexist at once, which seem to contradict each other. Like, life is inherently beneficent, perfect, made of love beyond our ideas of love, you know, the kind of love that powers universes, the kind of love that the sun contains, which causes gives us life on earth and causes everything to grow. That kind of love, it's just power, pure, just powerful creative force. So everything contains that is all that is, and yet that can seem to misinterpret itself and not recognize itself within certain contexts. And my feeling is that Earth is a particularly unique context for this to be, that love, bliss, Satchitananda, to be looking at itself from. It's like, this is a particularly, I don't want to, because we talk about a lot of stuff, you know, in non-duality, and so it is all that, and it sounds great, but this, my feeling is, this is a particularly challenging realm for us to be looking at, a particularly challenging funhouse mirror for us to be looking at ourselves in. Like, it's like a really dense, challenging experience. It never became anything other than what it is. It never stopped being liquid gold. It never stopped being love. But it's a very dense, yeah, it's just difficult to find the words. It's like in the law of one terms, it's, you know, it's a very strong level of density, I guess you say, or low level of density. It's heavy, and it feels, the illusion is at its highest, it feels separate.
There's a lot of resistance, isn't there? There's a lot of, Earth comes with a lot of resistance, and really the nature of suffering is resistance. It's a no to reality, it's a no to what is.
Yeah, it's a no. It's basically saying no. Like, this is yes. Universe, like the Big Bang, is a big yes. Like, this is all a big yes, isn't it? You know, it's this, as I said, the celebration cake. You know, this is the sugary sweet bliss powered by pure ecstasy, just a fucking massive yes. And then at some point, there's been such a, who knows what's happened, but at some point we look around as that and we go no. And that, the reason that hurts is because that's completely out of alignment with the fundamental yes that creates universes. It's just totally out of alignment, and that's the reason it hurts. It's just like, no. Like, it doesn't make any fucking sense to say no. How can you say no to reality? Like, you, it's just like you're saying no to the entirety of everything. This one little guy is saying no. There's this little kind of imaginary guy in this little tiny body saying no. And no wonder your body tenses up. You're trying to resist not just a particular thing, you're trying to resist the entirety of the power of the universe.
Yeah, exactly. And the universe is going, it's like, right now is like this, and it presents it like that. It goes, it's like this, and the whole force of the universe of life is going this, exactly like this. And you're kind of up against that going no. That trying is what we call suffering. Ultimately, even your no is part of a yes. But how does no feel, right? At the end of the day, how does it feel? How does it feel to be in fear? Yeah, love is the only reality, and fear is a shadow of love, right? Is an illusion, is a distortion of love. Fear is a lie, and love is the only reality. So it's just one choice, love, 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 love. However, that's not to say that love can't present as fear, and it doesn't mean that we can't experience fear. So it's coming back to the truth of love, or shifting back to that fundamental yes. Not that you're ever against it, but experientially you might feel out of sync, and that hurts. It hurts. That resistance hurts. That no is suffering. So it's just a shift back to alignment, experiential alignment. Of course, you're not ever misaligned. It's experiential alignment. It's just going, oh yeah, it's like this, right? I'm going to work with this rather than against it, because it's futile trying to push against the force of reality.
Yeah, I think that's what surrender actually is the utter futility of resistance. Like, it's not like a mental thing where you go, oh, I'm going to surrender now. It's like there's something recognizes the total futility of resisting life, and something releases it. That's all, you know, you can't actually describe this, like what happens there when there's surrender, but there's a release of trying to push life away. It's just like something in the system just stops trying to push life away, and that is surrender. You know, you can call that surrender, because it's a totally futile thing to do. Like, there's a guy or girl in the system, like there, that, you know, we call the ego, who is trying to constantly resist the yes, and it's got its own mini yes, which it thinks it's really like based on like cultural narratives and beliefs and stuff it's brought up with, and just its own distorted, warped perspective of what the yes is, and it believes that yes based on its own, I mean, it's got like 1/1,000,000,000th the data of the entire universe, you could say, and given the tiny bit of data it's got, it's gone, I know what the yes is, I know what life should be, and it just knows nothing, and it's distorted what it sees as well into its own belief system, and it's gone, I know what this should be now, this should be like this, and life is going, it's like this. It's like, life isn't going to argue with you, because you are life. It's just going to keep presenting, like you say, this, 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 this. And then if that little thing in the system resisting it continues to resist, it's just going to hurt. And it's for good reason. Because to say out of alignment, it's not a terrible way of describing it, but it's a misinterpretation. It does feel out of alignment with some fundamental truth as well, though. That's the way it feels, is it feels like, I do feel like when you're following that guy and you're going into fear, there's a kind of miss, like you say, all that's made is love. You're going into the shadow part of love. So there is a kind of misalignment, I suppose you could say, it was one way of talking about it. Again, these are just words. If these words don't work for you, then drop them. That's fine. It's no problem. But if anything that is just going against the fundamental... life is just saying yes. It's always... And like you say, it doesn't mean you can't change life, but it's more the way that... You can change your circumstances and stuff. The way that kind of happens is kind of like, again, these are words. It's like surfing. You know, when you're resisting life, you're trying to swim against the wave, really. You've got this massive wave. It's a tsunami. There's no way you can swim against it, but you try. That's you resisting life. When you realize that, but you do, there are kind of like, you feel like you'd like to take your life in a possible direction for the expression of joy and love, perhaps, maybe. You're kind of then surfing that wave. You are going along with the wave, but you're utilizing the wave. And of course, there's no you separate from the wave, so you dissolve into the wave in this metaphor, of course. But this isn't just to say, sit here. You should accept all levels of abuse, because life is always saying yes. And that's not what we're saying. This is just to say that in this moment right now, that you'll feel, if you just feel into your body, there's a slight, just either a very subtle or stronger contraction. And that is that resistance. That is, you could say that's the ego just resisting this moment in some way. You can feel it in the body. The body is where it is so obvious. For me, anyway, it just feels so obvious. When my body is totally relaxed, I am the moment. I am in flow with it. I am the yes. There's no, the illusory no has dissolved. But where there's contraction, you can feel that something in there is habitually trying to resist this moment. or preparing itself for the next moment where it feels like it's gonna need to resist the moment, or resisting its idea of the past. But either way, there's a contraction in the system that is resisting life right this moment in your body. And if you feel into that, just notice it. And the second you notice it, you're kind of free of it. It's allowed to be there. It doesn't need to change. But just the noticing of it, you're going, okay, you can maybe even gently speak to it. You don't need to resist this. It's fine. You can try and love it. That kind of works. Or you can just let it be there and just feel into it, feel what it's like. What is it actually made of? Is it made of... is the resistance itself made of resistance? When you're exploring that resistance, is that made of resistance or is that made of the yes? You know, is that made of... I think when you begin to explore it, there's no longer the resistance to it. So it's just about exploring, where am I resisting? Really? Where am I resisting? Because there's a lot of ways in which you're resisting and which I'm not even aware to you consciously. And the body is basically a great tool for this, in my opinion. It just, there's little tensions all over the body, and go, oh, can I just relax that tension? Can I relax this tension? Do I need to have that tense there? You can try that and go, oh, okay, I don't need to resist. What am I resisting? Why am I tensing? Like, what is it that's tensing right now? What am I tensing against? If I'm just sitting in a chair doing nothing, why is there need for tension? I'm not having to hold anything up. I'm not having to push anything away physically. Why is there tension? You know, what am I trying to resist against? So that's kind of something to look at. And then you can go deeper, of course, if it doesn't feel like these tensions are just so deep or so physically habituated to that the body just won't release them. You can then go, okay, so it's not releasing them. That's fine. What are they made of? What are these little knots in the system made of? What are these resistance areas made of? These tensions made of? What are they actually? Is resistance itself, when I really, really delve into it, look at it with a microscope, do I find more resistance, or do I find at the bottom of it all, do I find non-resistance?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? That's the amazing thing. Where is the last place you would look for non-resistance? The last place you would look for non-resistance is in the resistance. But that's where it is. I mean, it's everywhere, including in the non-resistance. What appears as resistance is, in essence, non-resistance. Delving into the dog shit, you don't find dog shit ultimately. You find the cake. You find the essence of the cake. And there's nothing, you've not done anything there. You've not changed anything. You've not removed anything. You've just got closer to what's actually there. And that's what we always say, isn't it? It's like, you don't even need to resist the resistance. Just get close to it. Check it out. Explore it. Explore the fabric of it. And you don't find resistance there. And that goes for anything. Anxiety, anything at all. Get close to that anxiety, and you don't find someone who is anxious because you don't find anxiety. And this is not the same as, oh, there's no one here to be anxious and anxiety is just illusory. When I get really close to this energy I'm calling anxiety, the sensation I'm calling anxiety, it's alive, it's dynamic, it's vivid, it's vital. There's so much life there, even though, like, the mind's interpretation of the anxiety is this will kill you, right? I mean, ultimately, that's our greatest fear, isn't it? That's our basic fear. It's death. Oh, this will kill you. This anxiety will kill you. And it's like, no, there's so much life here. There's a radiance to this energy. And there's not a me, there's not an identity wrapped up in it. I thought there was, and I thought it meant that I was anxious, but when I got close to it, I couldn't find an identity. I just find this enigmatic life energy. It's just life force appearing as this for this moment. You're liberated. That's another way of saying you're liberated. Not through doing anything, changing anything, becoming anyone else, but going into it, really getting close to it. And ultimately, you don't find anxiety. You find something more like, well, I mean, I don't want to put a word on it, but more like non-anxiety, let's say. So the last place you look for that non-anxiety is in anxiety. or whatever it is.
Also, there's something about, it's like the pure curiosity of looking and going, okay, wait, what's here? Something about that, there's some kind of magic that I do have to say, it's kind of a magic there, not actual magic, but it's like just in the looking, just if the willingness to look is like already the ticket to freedom, isn't it? It's like, it's because you're seeing, it's just you're undermining the illusion of resistance, the illusion of anything being able to resist reality at all. Because it has to be, it's like a phantom of sorts. The idea something can actually resist reality and that there is a something resisting reality is an illusion. There's nothing there resisting it. But it can definitely appear as what feels like bodily tension and resistance, and it hurts and I hate it. You know, like it definitely can appear like all of those things. But there's no resistor in there. There's just life expressing, and then there's this kind of like phantom anti-life, you know, like it doesn't make any sense. Why would life resist itself? Like it doesn't actually make any sense at all. So just the willingness to look it's something about the curiosity, the playfulness, the willingness to look, like looking like a very curious, playful scientist, you know, going, okay, there's this terrible, dark, scary monster. Let's see what we can find out about this guy. Because then you like just, you know, what is he made of? Where's he come from? This is fascinating. Like, you know, when you really look, it's not scary anymore. The closer you look, in fact, the less scary it becomes. And it's like all illusions. This kind of resistance pattern, this anti-life kind of mechanism is like the same. It works in the same way as all illusions do. Like it's a mirage. The closer you get to it, the more it disappears. It's like a ghost. You get right up to it, it dissolves, you know, like it just isn't there. But from a distance, as long as you keep it at a distance and believing it, like, you are the creator of reality. You are ultimately powerful. Ultimately, what you are is what this is. God, you know, reality, whatever you want to call it, the Big Bang, the universe. You can give reality to that as long as you are not investigating it and undermining it as an actuality. You are literally giving it some form of reality as long as you're believing it to be there and believing it to be a real thing. You are giving it a kind of pseudo reality, which is painful. It is interpreted as pain. It is felt as pain. There's so many ways into this. There's so many ways into this as well. Like the timing, you may be in a place where you can look and you're just like, okay, I'm going to investigate this because I'm really tense and my body's hurting and like, I feel like I'm resisting life. And let's have a look at this. You know, I can feel it in my lower back. I can feel it in my legs or wherever. I can feel it in my chest. Like, let's have a look at it. You might be in a place where it just feels right to look at it and investigate in this scientific kind of way, where like you're a curious scientist or almost like a child with a childlike curiosity. That could be right for you right now, but another time it might not be right. This is just stuff, you know, from my own experience. Another time it might be right just to kind of put your hand on your heart, just rub your heart, like kind of smile gently and just kind of tell that part of yourself, tell those tensions, tell that bit that's hurting, I love you, it's okay. It's just okay. Just sending it love. And that sounds like a more dualistic practice, but it's just another way of approaching this. The softness of reality, you know, it doesn't always have to be a deconstruction type thing. It doesn't always have to be a scientific type thing. It can be a softness, heart-based process. You're still doing it with the intention to see what's there, but you're just like, there's a softness there, a sort of self-compassion. Because in my own experience, I've caused myself a lot of, I think I've not been very, let's just say I haven't been very gentle with myself with this stuff. And I'm like, no, let's look now, you know, like we're going to look now, even though I feel absolutely terrible. And I'm like, my heart is breaking and I feel sad. And I'm like, no, I'm going to look into this. And that's sure. That sometimes that's great and it can be incredibly profound. But sometimes just have a bit of self-love and just like see, this body, even this little mechanism that is resisting life, it's, you know, it is all part of reality. It is all there. It deserves love just as much as anything else. Just give it a little bit of love. Like, just rub your heart, smile. Just tell yourself you love yourself. Tell that, even tell the ego you love it. Like, it's strange what that will do. Like, it is strange. This isn't something that's usually talked about in non-duality, but that side of it, there's a softness to it in which you're no longer put, the ego only lives, the resistance pattern only lives as long as you're pushing against it. And in that softness, something might happen where it feels safe and there's nothing, the illusion of the resistance can fall and just dissolve into the softness, into the warmth of the love. And that's another approach, you know, it might feel more appropriate or more resonant for some people. And for some people, they will hate that approach and be not interested in it whatsoever. But I've done both and at different times, and at different times, both are appropriate for different times. Sometimes it's just a case of like self-parenting and just going, okay, I'm with you. I've got your body as like a little pet that you've got, you're with for this lifetime. And I love you. I know you're trying. I know you're not trying to tense up and resist life. I know you're not. I'm just sending a little message of safety, of warmth, of love to that aspect of reality that feels like it's not part of reality. And just sending that to it. And then maybe it will feel comfortable enough to join the rest of us. Join the rest of reality in the big yes, you know. It might feel the safety enough to then drop its guard and not resist anymore. It might do, it might also might not, and that's also fine. And can you be with that as well and tell that resistance that won't drop itself that it's okay as well?
Yeah, I loved what you said earlier. You said the willingness to look is the ticket to freedom. That willingness or that readiness, that what even may feel like courage to look and to be with, is the ticket to freedom. But it can be quite scary just to look, even if you have the willingness, it can be quite scary to be with what is. And what certainly helps to facilitate the process of being with and looking is drawing on resources like clarity or safety, whatever it is. Tune into that quality of being while holding that part of you that is seeking that quality. The noticing of that quality as it is expressed in the moment unconditionally, without any seeking, without any manipulation of experience, that is healing. That is wholeness. Another thing you said was the closer you look, the less resistance you find, because you are more experientially aligned with what is. To step back and see that it all morphs and changes and it's so fluid. You know, nothing can be pinned down. Nothing stays. Nothing is static. Nothing is permanent. So change and transformation happens anyway. You don't need to try and push life around, make it conform to your ideal dream.
No. Yeah. It's not a real entity or thing. I'm not saying there's not something, all of the beautiful qualities that, you know, these quote unquote characters display are real. There's a reality to that. Like, I don't feel that that's this resistance thing we call the ego. It's characters, the way they express in the, like, their humor and their love and intelligence and wisdom. There's something true there. So you don't need to get rid of the character. There's something. What we're talking about here is the resistance against life, this contraction. That's what the ego is. This sense of self that's separate from life, not the enjoyable qualities of this expression of life that you might call Paul or Nick or whoever. There's a contraction that feels it's separate from life, and that's the thing we're talking about. And that doesn't actually exist other than a bundle of resistance. And when you don't push against it, there's no resistance. It just is. What people identify a lot of the time with is, you could call it pure fear. It's like pure resistance. And it's, that's the thing that dissolves. The character can still express in these beautiful ways, but the thing that dissolves is this contraction, this feeling of being a separate self from life. just separated from life. And if you're not pushing against that thing, it won't push back because it doesn't actually exist. It's like, you know, you can pretend in a dream, you can push against a wall and you can really, if you believe that wall is real, you can push and it will push back. You're actually pushing against your own mind. You're pushing against your own resistance in that dream. So if you're dreaming and you're lucid and you know you're dreaming, you might walk through into the wall sideways or backwards, or you just kind of remind yourself it's not really there. And then once you start to feel your fingertips kind of just go through the wall, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, there's no wall there. You know, the Matrix moment, there is no spoon. You're actually just pushing through your own resistance. And then when there's no resistance, you're actually just pushing through air. You're just going through air. You're just going through, well, just emptiness. And I've had that in dreams. I've had that, you know, I've tried that with all kinds of objects where I've been lucid. I've just tried pushing through walls, windows, cars, just walking through them. Like, and you can feel at the moment your mind starts to believe, even when you're lucid. Oh, is this, could this actually be a window? Maybe. And then it hits back. It will feel as real as you want it to feel or as you believe it will feel. And the contracted separate self is exactly like that. It seems real. It seems absolutely real because we keep reinforcing it with our beliefs about it being real. And we just are so convinced of its reality at such a deep level that it just seems to be there all the time as this contraction, this feeling of separation from life, from reality. But it's not real. We just continue to reinforce it. And it's the wall. It's the wall in the dream. Stop resisting against it, it won't resist back. And this is the gift of the lucidity of seeing life clearly, seeing reality clearly, is that separate self drops away, not because you've overcome it or because you're enlightened or anything like that. It drops away because it was never really there. You see it in the same way a lucid dreamer sees a wall. It may appear real at times. Once you've seen reality clearly, it may appear like a solid wall. It may appear like a resisting separate self. But you know it's not. And then you, as you put your hand into it, it dissolves, you know? And with the same with separate self, it dissolves. That when you start to look at it again, you go, oh, actually, yeah, you're not actually a resistance. You're not actually real.